I'd like to invite Kitty Hayward of Queen's University of Belfast, Department of Sociology, to offer us a few thoughts.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks very much to John and the other authors for inviting me to speak today. The only remit I was given was to speak for 5 minutes. They didn't tell me that I had to flatter the subjects of the book, so I'll proceed.
Oh, dear.
Part of the research I do involves being in Ardoyne on the 12th of July, witnessing the stirring up into existence of the so-called culture wars. What these parades and protests demonstrate in most florid form is a bizarre neurosis of Northern Ireland politics, that of defiant insecurity. Phrases picked up in field research illustrate this. From the contemptuous banner, F your talks, we will walk, to the anxiously whispered comment from one Twiddell neighbour to another, the tables are fairly turned all right. We don't need the sight of Nigel Dodds under a water cannon at Woodvale's front line to be reminded that this defiant insecurity is present at the top level of unionist leadership. Indeed, the DUP has made a motivating, cohering ideology out of it. What gives the party its foundational drive and sustained support is the idea that it represents a vulnerable, victimised people, a people who can trust few beyond their group, ourselves alone, if you wish. Indeed, the party goes so far as to imply that it cannot truly trust the institutions of the state that it governs. Do note, this same discourse also drives Sinn Féin, but it's easy to identify, and for tourists to romanticise, the roots of a Republican discourse of persecution. It is harder to understand its manifestation within the DUP. How can such a prosperous and dominant political party carry off the Hard Dunbuy Act with such a bullish swagger? This book goes far in illuminating this conundrum. The insecure but defiant identity is one that can have purchase on both loyalist working class experience and middle class Protestant sensibilities. Due to constraints of time, these 5 minutes, I will focus my comments on a brief exploration of the latter. It is noted in the introduction to the book that the DUP embodies unionism as politicised Protestantism. Now, this phrase has been used before. Jo Rouen and Jennifer Todd use it in their 1996 Dynamics of Conflict book. Back then, they applied it in the context of the increasingly problematic issue of contentious Orange parades. They wrote, "The marches, with their archaicism, politicised Protestantism, and their settler mode of Britishness, subvert unionist, IUUP, attempts to set a normal tone of modern British life and politics in Northern Ireland." Now, 20 years on, the tone being set by mainstream unionism is that which was once confined to the embarrassing hardline, that of archaicism, a settler mode of Britishness, and politicised Protestantism. Thanks to Pastor McConnell's infamous YouTube hit, we have an example of the implications of politicised Protestantism. I want to make two observations about the episode. First, this was a manifestation not so much of racism, but of sectarianism. Stigmatisation, castigation, even disdain for a different religious persuasion is more than a habit. It is a normal mode of argumentation. Those who disagree are simply not seeing the light. Now, we see this in politics all the time, of course, with the idea that Blair or Cameron can justify political action merely on the basis that it is the right thing to do. The difference is, of course, that Blair or Cameron can be held to account by parliamentary committee or shifting voter preferences. If, however, a party needs only to secure its appeal within its own constituency, and if this is best done by stoking distrust and insecurity, then the only judgment that really matters need only be that of God on the day of judgment. If there is no motive or potential for change, the moderating force of political democracy is, in effect, rendered obsolete. Which leads to my second observation. McConnell and the First Minister both claimed and made use of a universal human right and a bedrock of Western liberal democracy, i.e. freedom of speech, but they used this freedom to express a view that would see the end of liberal democracy were it to be brought about to its logical conclusion. Robinson's condemnation of Islam was based on his objection to it in the shape of Islamic terrorism or Pakistani state interpretation of Sharia law. He does not trust such Muslims because they are devout, because they are fundamentalist, because they believe that their religious principles should absolutely inform their political action. In other words, he objects to politicised Islam. He objects to it because, he argues, it poses a threat to liberal democracy. the same democracy which has allowed his own brand of politicised Protestantism to flourish. But this is a Protestantism not for the people, but for a party. It is a faith for the redemption of individual souls, but not for the greater good. It is no substitute for political responsibility or for democratic accountability. Democracy is fragile. It is imperative that parties can foster political capital based on confidence rather than insecurity. A political culture of trust rather than defiance. A political leadership founded on respect, not on faith.